Loyalist seems to be a dirty word. Loyalism seems to be tarred with a dirty brush. It seems to me that our lack of the representatives aren't doing enough to offend us.
That was the voice of Graham Morris, a young loyalist from Lisburn. He was venting his frustration at the first public meeting of the Unionist Forum. Set up in the wake of the Union flag protests, its aim was to address a perceived disconnect between Unionist politicians and the protesters. 3 months after the protests began, the public meeting was organised by loyalists, frustrated at the inaction of the forum. The flag protesters originally took to the streets last December, after Belfast City Council voted to restrict the flying of the Union flag. Organised through social media, the protests took on a life of their own. There followed some of the worst rioting by loyalists in recent years. One of the worst affected areas was Inner East Belfast, which suffered several consecutive nights of violence back in January. Rioters attacked police with bricks, bottles and petrol bombs. Calls from the DUP and also Unionist politicians to end the protests were ignored.
It's almost as if the genie got out of the bottle. Now, that's bad enough, but the fact that nobody knew there was a genie in the bottle, except people like me who have been saying these things for...
That's the thing, people have been saying it for years.
I've been saying it.
And still, people are, you know, scratching their heads as if, you know, where did this come from?
Where did it come from?
That was Ulster Unionist MLA Michael Copeland. I drove with Michael from his office in Stormont to the area around the Newton Arch Road where some of the worst rioting took place. This area was once populated by shipyard workers from nearby Harland and Wilf, and it has never recovered from the loss of employment when the shipyard closed.
Yeah, there's a mural there of a young girl running through fields.
Well, it certainly looks to be with leaves of some description following her. Perhaps rather symbolically, there don't appear to be cannabis leaves, but could be construed as cocoa or cacao.
You can really see a difference when you get down here. There's a lot of derelict buildings and
different black and
empty spaces.
And I'll take you along and explain to you the other side of this road. All of these things that have now reduced themselves to painting shop fronts, as they used to be, which is a poor imitation for commerce. And again, the quality of the shops as you go down the road continues to decrease. There's a large number of takeaway eating houses. There's a large number of second shops. You can here equip yourself for military and combat operations should you be so inclined. If it doesn't work out too well, you can get buried from here.
Some paramilitary flags and murals at this end of the road rather than...
All the paramilitary flags and murals you can wish for. There's also the statue to the three shipyard workers. But the Union flag primarily down here would always surpass numerically probably everything else. They go up, they get taken down, they go up, they get stolen, memorials are defaced.
What's this area called here?
This would be, I would call it Ballymacarrot. Uh-huh. It's the Pitt Park area of the Lower Newton Arch Road, named after Dr. Pitt. With some private investment here, but again, people tend to drive in to their...
There's very high security fence around that.
Yeah, well,
it's not really part of the community at all.
It's not. That's exactly the point, that community used to exist when nobody talked about community. Now community is a word that's used. I've heard it more often since I became involved in politics than I ever heard it before. And the very thing that they destroyed by one set of actions, they seek to recreate artificially by another.
Along the peace wall between this loyalist community and the nationalist Short Strand, the scars of the sectarian conflict are clear to see.
It's strange to see in what look like new modern houses, bars and screens across the windows.
It may be strange to you coming from where you come from, but it's not strange to me. And you'll find exactly the same thing over in the environs of Short Strand.
What's your understanding of what happened to that fence, Michael?
That fence was driven at this Land Rover, knocked down and injured, not seriously, thank goodness, but badly, several women. So look, if you and I had done it in a car, being an act of criminal damage, there may well have been an overriding tactical need for it. But police officers driving by the Land Rovers and driving through fences is a little bit silly in my view.
What's the relationship with the police like here?
A good deal worse today than it was a couple of months ago.
Does that come and go? Or
it does. It tends to come and go with the same frequency that TSGs come and go.
And the damage that's been done between this community and the police, how long will that take to fix?
In my view, it's incalculable. I would normally have had some indication, but it has been set back dramatically. Mm-hmm. The large church you see in front of us...
The economic and sectarian divides in this part of East Belfast are obvious. Some politicians like Michael would argue that these divisions have contributed to the violence in this particular area. But the flag protests happened right across Northern Ireland. So what happened politically within the broader unionist family? Here's Professor Pete Churlow from Queen's University.
Well, I think it's different things. I think in some ways you saw different reactions. So the media would have represented it as that here comes loyalism again, and this is a dysfunctional group, and this is a group which isn't prepared to work in democratic ways. And you would have had that sort of broad brush approach. I think it exposed several things. First of all, within sections of loyalism, you had the rioting and you had those who did engage with Bryson and Willie Fraser. You also have within loyalism people like Jackie McDonald and others who would have quite publicly said, we don't want this in our areas, we don't want roads blocked, this is a folly. But you would have had a general sense in unionism of an anger about the flag. I think that's fair enough. And that would go, you know, across different senses of that. So for some, that would be quite a benign sort of, you know, well, there's another bit of our culture which is gone, through to this is my culture, this is my identity, this is my belief, etc. So within unionism, there's never one opinion, there's never one strand. I don't think there's a thing called political unionism, it's political unionisms. There are different types of unionism and different senses of beliefs, which comes from the dissenter tradition and comes from that general practice of, you know, unlike Republicans, where you actually can put up your hand and say, I disagree.
Relations between unionist politicians and loyalists have always been complicated. Since Ian Paisley's involvement with Ulster Resistance, mainstream unionism has flirted with loyalism. The change in political direction of the DUP since the St Andrews Agreement has, according to Michael Copeland, left some loyalists confused.
But politics is politics. And there is a sense that for 40 years, one particular individual, primarily in a political party, undermined and decimated anybody else who was trying to provide leadership in unionism. O'Neill must go, Chichester Clark must go, Harry West must go, Jim Molyneux should go but might not have to go under the same circumstances. You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And then, in the final throes of it, because he was the only person left standing and his party were the only thing left standing, turned around and after never, and those five, did something that to ordinary folk here is construed as worse than what he condemned everybody else for doing. And then because he had changed his mind, he couldn't understand why other people were less than convinced.
To say there's a disconnect and even a bitterness between loyalism and unionist politicians is true, up to a point. However, behind the scenes, quiet work has been going on between the main unionist party, the DUP, and former paramilitaries. After the unionist forum meeting in Lisburn, DUP MP Geoffrey Donaldson chatted freely with loyalist representatives from the Progressive Unionist Party and the UPRG, the political wings of the UVF and UDA respectively. Philip Dean is a lifelong Lisburn loyalist. He is now director of social enterprise projects in his home city and chairs the Resurgent Trust. As a former member of the UDA-linked Ulster Democratic Party, he freely admits that relations between mainstream unionists and loyalists weren't good in the past. I asked Philip why things have changed.
There seems to be a really close relationship between the DUP and the UPRG and the UDA. Am I right in saying that?
No, I wouldn't class in those groupings as such, you know. People wear many hats.
In certain areas, though, there seems to be quite a...
Yeah, well, we'll put it this way, in Lisburn, you know, the community reps who work on a daily basis on the ground have a good working relationship with the DUP. And we've done it on purpose, you know. The largest party in Lisburn, they control the council, you know, the largest amount of MLAs. So it's common sense that you want to make your politicians work for you. I'll be honest, if it was the Ulster Unionists were in that position, that's who we'd have the working relationship with. You know, but I think what we have done here in Lisburn is made the politicians say, you know, these labels that people carry about, you know, just because, you know, you have a background or you have a history doesn't mean you have the ability to do good within your community or have the ability to move on from your background or your history. You know, and so yes, there's a good working relationship, but I wouldn't necessarily say that the DUP has a good working relationship with the UDA.
Is there still, to an extent, the DUP wouldn't publicly want to be too associated with people that were involved in the UDA?
That might have been the case a few years ago. I don't know. It's we'll put it this way, you know, I work with former prisoners, you know, former combatants and people who, you know, some of the press would say are alleged to have this, or, you know, that we nudge in the wink in the street, people say, oh, he's such and such. And the DUP have no problem working at all when they're standing for a photograph or being involved in a community group or a committee or a board of directors with people. It's all down to whether or not what's your bona fides now. Are you working for the better and the good of your community?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never had a time when any politician within Lisburn has said, oh, I'm not certain beside him, or I'll not be getting involved in that committee because they're all shady characters, or it just doesn't happen.
Do you think the DUP use loyalism when it suits them?
I think they have in the past, there's no doubt. You mean, I was involved with the UDP in the early to late 90s, and that was our war cry, you know, led us up the hill. And I, you know, it was the working class loyalism, and primarily, if you like, you know, were used as muscle, you know, and then to start to think for themselves, and that's when sort of relationships started to change.
So is loyalism becoming a dirty word? Pete Shurlow argues that as society changes, so do badges of identity, and that poses some big questions for political unionism.
So I think it has created a wee bit of a shockwave, but what's also exposed is the class dynamics. Like, the middle classes may be angry that the flag came down or concerned that the flag came down, but they were more concerned that working class people were blocking the road. It wasn't a crisis in the sense that not many people participated compared to the Belfast Agreement, etc. But I think we are at a junction now where some people are starting to realise that unionism is for some an identity, but some other people it's just a preference. So United Ireland is really a preference for sort of liberal unionists. I prefer not to have United Ireland, but there's no identity to that anymore. It's not Orangeism, it's not Ulster Scots, there's nothing to that which is identity. And then you've got another section which is more brutal and much more nationalistic, which is we're being betrayed and Sinn Féin are taking over. Mm-hmm. And that's very hard. For political unionism, I don't know how you balance that, because do you become more sectarian or do you become more liberal? Because you're going to lose somewhere along the way the electorate in some way. So I think it's created an interesting point at which a long journey is now starting to be exposed, where people have been critical for a long time in different ways. And the problem with unionism, political unionism, is how they garner that and where they take unionism out of this.
If the section of loyalism involved in flag protests or disorder are an embarrassment to certain sections of unionism, it will result in a widening social gulf. For Michael Copeland, there is a generation of young people whose potential is being wasted, and he believes this is something all of society needs to address.
The worst thing anybody can do is to, for any reason, demean any section of society, especially at a time when it feels itself just not exactly worthless, but little valued and little understood. Not everyone who wears a hoodie is a thug. Not everyone who wears a hoodie is a drug addict. Not everyone who wears a hoodie is a person of lesser being. They are the creation of the circumstances that they were and the areas that they were born into, and that's a societal responsibility. People talk about cushy lives and benefits. There are no cushy lives and benefits. It saps the soul, it saps the moral fibre, it saps the aspiration, and it kills the ambition of a generation of young people who 100 years ago would have been building technologically the Titanic, which they couldn't have put the man on the moon. And given the right conditions and the right encouragement and the right self-esteem, they are capable of much, much more than society's demanding of them.